Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Oh, wheat, beans, and corn all fall, and we're just a week away from the acreage reports. We'll talk about it all today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Our panelists today are Dale Durkles of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois, Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing of Lexington, Illinois, and Steve Schilling of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois. Gentlemen, let's open today's discussion with this question. The rain has fallen mainly on the plain, and wheat futures dropped 15 cents. The question is, how much of that rain will actually make grain, or is it just better pasture for that wall of beef cattle on the marketplace? Dale Durkles.
You know, there's no way you can really put a finger on it at this point, and I think taking a look at the condition ratings in Texas, Oklahoma, and even Kansas this Monday night is going to be real important. You know, we've brought Kansas City wheat futures back and done a 50% correction and haven't broken that yet, so, you know, I think the condition ratings Monday might provide an interesting insight.
Steve Schilling, your look at the wheat market, please.
One thing that came out this week we found a little bit interesting. I think it came out about Wednesday. The insurance companies out in down in the southern hard wheat area had already agreed to let them tear it up and come up with different crops to plant for substitution type things. They've withdrawn this chance. They're going to make them leave it intact for 30 days. Might be more acres now harvested. Won't be great yields, 10 to 15 bushel, but that's still better than zero.
And Bill Mayer.
I think that I would definitely agree with that. The looks like to me we bought some time here, but we'll probably see some more concern before we get into the wheat harvest.
Taking a look at the numbers from the Chicago Board of Trade as they finished in the wheat pit for the week, 355 and a quarter, the high for the May contract, the low at $3.40. July ended at 354 and a half. They were off 15 and a half cents for the week, and that May contract down 15 cents at 342 and a half. May corn in Chicago, 225 and a quarter, the high, the low at 217. The May settled week to week at $2.18¾, off 2¾ from last Friday's settlement price. And the December contract managed to hold above 250, 251 and a half on the settlement price. They were down a penny and three quarters from last week. Any reason to think that corn futures will sneak below 250 in the December contract anytime soon?
You know, I think the real key in the corn, and a lot of people might find this interesting, I think the tale will be told in the wheat market, and the direction and trend we get out of the wheat is probably going to be the key, because whatever happens in wheat is going to have a sentimental impact in the corn market. My personal bias is it probably won't.
Is that going to happen in the next week before the acreage report, or do we have to have more time for wheat to really figure out where it's headed, other than down at the moment?
I think wheat, probably the tale will be told as we come in Monday morning, because some of the weakness we even had on Friday was contingent upon another good weather system in the middle of this coming week. And if we come in Monday and we see that that isn't going to be very heavy, and then if we see Monday evening condition ratings didn't improve substantially, you know, I think the wheat can probably get some lift again.
You agree with this? Is wheat going to lead the corn lower?
Yeah, I think that we've seen that, or lead the corn lower. I'm not sure
or
about
higher
that.
One way, or lead the corn.
I think
the
wheat will lead. I think the going between now and next Friday's report, I think you're going to see a lot of choppiness. I think the Friday report, and as Dale said, some reality as far as whether that front comes through and they get some showers out there will determine how we end up the week next week.
What's your feeling about the report as we head into next Friday and what the kind of numbers it may show for the corn pit?
Well, everybody's got their own guess. One thing I'm finding interesting, I was doing a little bit of traveling this week, and I still see a lot of AMS, or ammonium sulfate, being put on corn stalks this week in central Illinois. Now, is that a change of thought process from last fall, or is it just something they didn't get around to? So numbers are all over the board on what we're going to do. I think generally everybody expects reduced corn acres, increased beans, but sometimes people can fool us.
Frankly, when you sit back and you look at the economics of the situation, we don't have enough economic incentive either way to push the acreage. And you know, most of the people I've talked to as I've been out on the road this winter have just said, you know, they're probably not going to make a change. So my guess is, you know, I'd be surprised if it's over a million acres down in corn.
I have a follow-up question on what might happen next Friday, and I think I heard Dave Dickey talking to, maybe it was Dan Zwicker on Thursday, or it could have been Zuzulo on Friday, I don't recall which one, about the impact that the funds may potentially have in this marketplace, and because they don't tend to follow the fundamentals, that it may not really matter what the acreage numbers look like, and the funds will just do what the funds decide to do at the end of the month.
Well, I think there's a possibility there, and if you just sit back and kind of look at it logically, I mean, if you're going to go in and purchase corn, for example, you probably want to do that on the day when you've got higher volume. You typically have higher volume on report days, days after reports, and they can go in and purchase larger amounts of contracts without moving the market as much as they can on a day like, say, Thursday, where there's very low volume. I think that's a big part to why you see the funds come in after reports. I was just going to point out one other thing on the report here. Everybody's looking at the acres, and I think that's definitely important, but I'm kind of interested in the stocks number two to see where the stocks come out and see where our feeding may end up for this year. I guess I still have a feeling that our feeding may be a little bit too low as far as the USDA numbers.
Yeah, and so you're looking for what kind of increase?
I'm looking for fewer stocks on hand than what the average guesses for the trade. I'll have those numbers here right in front of me, Tom.
Anybody else agree with that?
I tend to. The one thing that, you know, I've noticed in beans, corn's always a little bit harder one to put your finger on. One thing that's important, March stocks numbers tend to be a lot better numbers than the December numbers, a lot more accurate, and you get a lot more indications off of them. But there's been a history in the bean market, especially the USDA stocks have tended to come in a little light because the USDA has had a tendency to overestimate the bean crop. I'm kind of wondering if we didn't do the same thing in corn this year. And see, that's something in corn. When you get a stocks number, is it production number that's off a little bit, or is it feeding rates that are a little bit different than what you expect? And there's no way to put your finger on that. But I think corn stocks could end up being a little light.
Let's turn to Pratt. Nope. You have a follow-up?
Well, I think, you know, these cattle that we got the report today that were placed and are on feed, they're not out there eating snowballs. That's going to have to be taken into account. Obviously, the hog numbers haven't been reduced, and so far in this country, we're still avian flu free, so we're still producing poultry. So there's got to be some feed consumption here, and the numbers may reflect that next Friday.
On the cattle numbers, by the way, on feed March 1 at 108, that was up at the top end of the range, but not outside of the range. It's a big number, placed in February at 105, once again within the range, and marketed at 99, and that was within the range as well. It should have an impact Sunday night, Monday morning on the marketplace.
The cattle on feed numbers?
Mm-hmm.
Not on the grain markets. And even as far as the cattle market, I don't know that they're going to be a big deal there. The biggest carrot I really pulled out of the cattle on feed numbers was, again, there seems to be a bit of a bias of placing lightweight cattle, but that's really kind of related to the poor pasture conditions and poor wheat quality conditions down there, and you can't put the calves out on that at this point, so we're shutting them into the lots. But the cattle market itself, we found a steady market this week, which is interesting. And we also have to remember, seasonally, we're at a time where we start to gear up for cookout season, barbecue season, post-Easter business, and also cattle numbers available to come to slaughter should go down a little bit over the next 3 to 4 weeks.
So you're looking for a little rise in the cattle market?
I think cattle prices could probably bite in here somewhere and turn up. And with April at a discount, you got to be real careful about staying very short.
We were talking about corn before we hit the cattle. Let's get back to that and talk a little bit about pricing here. Risk management is pretty much done, at least for terms of insurance. That had to be done the 15th. Of March. Are farmers and you, I suppose, just willing to set along the sidelines now and watch it for a bit?
I think a person's got to be real careful in this game. I'm really not personally not much of a bear in the market, but I really respect the fact, you know, the carryout we have and the fact that we still got a lot of bushels sitting around the Midwest in piles that at some point has to be cut loose and moved. And so to me, I've got risk 215 underneath that on the May contract tells me that, you know, this thing can be weaker than what people think in the short term.
I really think it depends, Todd, on your question as to what people have done. If you're looking at new crop corn, if you didn't get any sales made on the run-up there that we had, then I think you need to go out and look at some put options or something to get some kind of protection on. If you did make sales, I think you can be a little bit patient and wait. And if you think you got too aggressive and maybe made more sales than you're comfortable with, this may be a time to come in here and protect that with this down move in the market. So I think it really depends on what a person has done up to this point.
Your office willing to take the opportunities at this point?
We already have. Obviously, you've got to tie this market in with your insurance, and depending a little bit on what product you took this year, whether it was an individual product or the county products, which look so attractive to so many people throughout the states. We've already been pretty aggressive in getting a lot of new stuff sold.
Let's take a look at some of the other numbers. We'll finish up with the cattle and the hogs, and then we'll hit the numbers for the beans as well. Live cattle this week, April had a high of 83.95. They're low at 82.25. Settlement price at $82.47.5. They were off 55 cents from last week. The March feeders at 103.45 were down a buck 2.5. And the April lean hogs, 59.35 for their high, the low at 56.17, off 37.5 cents at $58.72. The March bellies at 86.60. They were up $3.40. From the soy complex now, May beans, $5.82 the high, the low at 5.71 1/4. May beans settled $5.73 3/4. They were off 2 3/4 from last week. The November beans at 6.03 1/4. They were down 2. Can they follow wheat, or are they going to find their own way in this marketplace?
You know, the bean market is the one thing that really intrigues me. You know, you look at the beans and you look at the fundamentals and you look at the fact that we're harvesting a huge crop, albeit in southern hemisphere at this point, but it's still a huge crop. And yet we have a market that really cannot find any bearish follow through to the downside at all. And the bean market is the one that keeps puzzling me and makes me wonder, is there something going on in commodities on a broad scale that's not readily apparent on the surface?
Things such as?
Well, it's how much money is flowing into this business. You know, it's really hard to put your finger on. What are these people really looking at? Are they seeing some things ahead or betting on something ahead that we aren't willing to address here today in terms of weather production, not only here, elsewhere, other things like that? You know, there's something happening there, and the bean market tells me that there's something different going on, because when you look at the fundamentals of beans, it's easy to argue they probably need to be 75 cents lower than they are today, but they aren't.
But we had the same argument last year and just watched the funds buy and buy, and that was all that it was, apparently, unless there's something else that one of you managed to pick up on that I didn't see.
Well, you never know really what it is. You know, it's when I look at a market, I look at the fundamental structure, and I also look at the technical structure. And, you know, there are times in there when they don't agree that you have to step back for a minute and you look at those and you go, what is it I'm missing? Because it's obviously you're either missing something on the technical side or you're missing something on the fundamental side, and it's hard to really ferret out what it is. And I just see that question hanging over my mind right now when I look at the bean market.
I'd like to go back to last year there too, Todd. I mean, we saw the world crop, the South American crop, was dropping pretty dramatically at this time a year ago. And that's something I believe from a fundamental standpoint. I believe the money flowing in is definitely a factor here. But we've seen the last 3 years or the last 2 years, from March to April, we started to see that drop in the South American crop. We had some an analyst out there this week that dropped their guesses by a million metric ton, and I think that kind of keeps the market on edge a little bit.
So last year and the year before, I think we dropped from 60 and 62, 63 million metric tons down to 58, 56, 54, 52, all the way to 48, I think, at one point.
Personally, I don't see that we're going to drop that kind of a drop this year, but I think it's kept the market on edge.
And then
one thing that is going on in Brazil, and this is related to the currency down there, the real has continued to strengthen on them down there, and basically that's pretty much kept the door shut on them moving beans out of the country at this point. So it's, you know, that's kind of playing into the same kind of thing where producers really aren't willing to sell stuff at this point. You know, it was also interesting. There was somebody that had done some kind of a survey down there and already are forecasting, because of economic problems, soybean acreage next year to decline in Brazil again.
what you just said was contrary to what the chief economist had to say after the last stocks report. You know, we upped it by 10 million metric tons, or 10 million bushel, I'm sorry, from 555 to 565. And he suggested that that was a loss in exports from the U.S. and a gain of exports for South America. So, but
it's a matter of timing. And see, that's the thing. Right now, where the real is going up, basically we're not selling stuff and moving stuff willingly out of this new harvest into the market at this point. It's a matter of when you do it, not necessarily that you do it.
Oh, I understand. So at that point we were losing, but you're saying that door may shut and they may have to literally keep it in-house simply because they...
Well, it's just going to be slower to come to market, and it's going to tend to force more business back here in the U.S. If you look at soybean sales, export sales, a lot of people have been kind of critical and negative on them. But since January 1, soybean sales have been running 40% ahead of the five-year average. And that's a different story. It doesn't say we're going to do anything wonderful relative to what the USDA is already projecting, but it says the 900 million bushels probably a doable number this year, and especially now with stuff tending to come out of Brazil on a slower pace.
Is a good reason for farmers who are the eternal optimist to continue to stay that way for beans?
That's a tough question, You know, the fundamentals, like Dale said, there should be 75 cents, or you could justify them being 75 cents. Bill and I were talking before we came on the air, and Dale wasn't here yet. But, you know, we're all kind of old-timers sitting around here right now. But, you know, $10 silver, $550 gold, $2.50 gasoline. Is that trying to tell us something that we're missing? And maybe that's the hidden ingredient that Dale was talking about. I don't think any of us have the answers, but, you know, it's something to consider.
It's you know, that's the one thing I think that's going to be hard to watch at this point, and that's money. And the money that's coming into the market, we also have to remember, is a different kind of money. You know, we loosely talk about funds, but today when you talk about funds, you have two hugely different funds, one of them being the speculative funds that we've been used to that buy and sell stuff aggressively. But these index funds, you know, they're coming in and looking at things from a multi-year, long-term basis, and they're buying and setting on stuff too.
When we return, we'll talk with Chip Flory. By the way, the May oats settled this week at $1.70¾, and they were down 2 for the week.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Winter weather is reluctant to loosen its grip on Illinois and the Midwest this week. A major storm swept through the lower Midwest on Tuesday, bringing up to 10 inches of snow to portions of central and southwestern Illinois. In the storm's aftermath, temperatures remained below normal as the central U.S. remained under the influence of northwesterly flow aloft. There was a pronounced northeast to southwest gradient in precipitation amounts this week. The northeastern corner of Illinois had very little precipitation, while the southwest received almost twice its normal weekly precipitation. Winter paid a visit on Tuesday, but the higher marsh sun and temperatures above freezing generally made short work of the snow, except where it was the deepest. Overnight lows and afternoon highs were both a few degrees cooler over the snowpack. Temperatures this week ranged from 5 degrees below normal in northern Illinois to 12 degrees below normal over the snow-covered portions of central Illinois. After a cool weekend, the weather should warm a bit early next week as southerly surface flow returns with the approach of a low-pressure system. That could bring some light rain south and snow or rain north on Monday. A stronger system will likely head toward Illinois by Thursday, increasing the likelihood of more rain and thunderstorms into next weekend. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu. Click on AM and then on Agriculture.
Well, I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists today on Commodity Week are Bill Mayer of Rochag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, Steve Schilling of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois, and Dale Durkles of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington. Joining us now is Chip Flory. He's the editor at Professional Farmers of America. He joined the Pro Farmer staff back in 1991. His specialty is anticipating the impact of major developments in supply and demand prospects on market psychology and price trends. Thanks, Chip, for joining us today.
Thank you, Todd.
Chip, I referred to the AgWeb website at the top of the show. That's where you write a column called Chore Time.
Right.
This question is in reference to the comments you made about the cattle market being, quote, ugly. So here it is.
Opening... I think I said real ugly.
Yes, you did. So here it is. Opening day is April the 3rd. Which has a better chance to rebound this year, the Cubs or beef cattle?
Cattle. And that's coming from a huge Cubs fan, but I think the cattle have got a better chance of rebounding. We've worked through so many tough things in this cattle market already, and I'm not saying that the path is cleared for this market to turn back up or anything like that, but the cattle market loves to make V-bottoms on the daily chart, on the weekly chart, on the monthly chart. Doesn't matter how long of a market or how long of a time frame you want to consider. Cattle love to make a V-bottom, and I think we've probably spiked far enough to the downside already. We'll start to look to bring this market back, and it's got to be on the back of domestic demand right now. We're still working out the details with Japan. I don't know how much more information they're going to want or need before they decide to pull the trigger and reopen beef trade again. But supposedly we're going to have a meeting March 28th and 29th with the Japanese officials again, try to answer any of their remaining questions and hopefully get some action here within the next 30, 40 days and start to move some beef back into Japan. Then at that point, then we've got to rebuild that market again and get the consumers back to buying U.S. beef in that Japanese market. Once that starts to happen, I think it will sometime early in 2007. That's when the exports will really start to show up and have an impact on the beef market again.
Yeah, my point is, you know, I agree. Livestock do make V-bottoms. They have a great history of that. The thing that I question at this point is whether things have gotten ugly enough. And, you know, I look at cattle at this point, and I think we're in a position where we could get some kind of a temporary move back to the upside again here as we go into the spring on a seasonal basis. But how easy is it going to be for cattle to fight the problem of cheap chicken?
Right. Yeah, that's the number one negative in my mind facing this market. Yes, we've got heavy weights out there right now. Yes, we've got a lot of cattle coming to market. But the number one issue out there is the competition from the cheap chicken. And the boxed beef market is trending down. It's doing what it can to encourage some wholesale movement and trying to put some cheaper beef out there where it can compete with that chicken. But until we get these chicken and poultry consuming countries around the world interested and willing to import U.S. chicken again, then we're going to be looking at some real tough competition for both beef and pork in the meat case from really cheap leg quarters in particular out there.
Chip, I'd like to switch over to the grains a little bit here. I think you heard our discussion earlier about the soybean market. Mm-hmm. What's your take on the soybean market and what's out there that we're not seeing possible?
You know, it's such a relief to hear you guys talking about this bean market being overvalued, because I'm in complete agreement on that. I have been in agreement on that for quite some time. But again, you know, the fact that we aren't trading 60, 70, 80 cents lower, you know, there is something in this market that is telling us that that beans may have value at these levels. And you look at domestic crush, we're running at a pace where if we would continue the pace that we're on right now, I believe we'd crush like 1.76 billion bushels of soybeans this year. I think that's 40 million bushels more than what USDA is projecting right now. I think we will do that 900 million bushels in exports. So, you know, I think we bottomed out as far as USDA's total usage number goes. We should start to see that usage number tick up just a little bit based on domestic demand. And if that happens, any kind of a downtick in that carryover is going to help change the psychology a little bit in that market. So it could just simply be the fact that we bottomed out the usage estimates already this year, and those numbers may start to move higher. We're going to find out a lot in that March 31 stocks report just on how aggressively we are using soybeans. And you know, the one thing that concerns me a little bit is even though the sales have increased a little bit since January 1, I'd still like to see a little bit quicker shipping pace out there on these beans. Get them out of the country and make sure they're not coming back.
Another question for you, Chip. What's your take on the acreage report this Friday? That's what's weighing heavily on everybody's mind and kind of waiting for everybody to make their next move, so to speak.
You bet. You know, I couldn't agree more with the comments about the Corn Belt guys. They are probably going to keep their acreage mix about the same as it has been. What concerns me the most is when you look down at the south, I think we're going to see a few more soybean acres down there, and then I think we're definitely going to see some more soybean acres in the Dakotas. I've done a couple seminar swings up through the Dakotas over the last 3-4 months, and those guys are more than interested in planting more and more soybeans. They're just tired of growing spring wheat. They're tired of dealing with the scab. Every time they take a bushel of wheat into the market, it gets docked somewhere in the range of 50 cents to a buck. The Minneapolis market has not done enough to buy spring wheat acres. And, you know, and then we sat back and made that roughly 50% correction from the high. And the market just is not giving it incentive right now to plant more spring wheat in the Dakotas. And they're going to plant soybeans. Some of the guys up in North Dakota, I know the North Dakota State University Extension Service is looking for a 30% increase in bean acres in North Dakota this year. That put them over 4 million acres. And that's an incredible crop up there. And the genetics on those short-season beans keep getting better and better. And when you're talking about growing 30, 35 bushel wheat or 30, 35 bushel soybeans, those guys up there will grow soybeans every time.
Well, what kind of acreage numbers do you think we're going to see come Friday then?
You know, we've been at a million-acre increase on soybeans and a million-acre decrease in feed grain acres, not just corn, but feed grain acres. We've been lumping it into corn for the time being and for discussion and debate sakes, but a million acres down in feed grains. I think that may be a little conservative now based on our latest talks with the guys in Dakotas and some of the guys in the South. But I sure don't think we're going to see a 2-million-acre increase in beans. We may inch up there to 1.5 million, something like that. But to get over that, that would be a wholesale change in my mind.
Any final word before we let you go for the day, Chip?
You know, you guys were talking about Brazil a little bit. It looks like the yields are coming out about as expected, maybe a little bit below expectations in some of those areas. And you were talking about the financial situation down there. It is as tough as it has ever been. And in Mato Grosso, the biggest bean-growing state down there, last year somewhere in the range of 70-80% of the growers down there lost money. This year it's going to be somewhere in the range of 85-95% of the growers are going to lose money. So as far as looking forward and what kind of trends that means for bean acres in Brazil for the 2007 crop, 2008 crop even, I think we are going to be looking at lower acres down there in Brazil for the next couple of years.
Thanks, Chip. Chip Flory is with Pro Farmer joining us from his office in Iowa. Now a final word from our panelists. We'll start with you.
Yeah, this is Dale. We are in a window for both corn and beans to possibly have some short-term lows in here, so maybe we can get a bite in this market and turn it back up again into spring.
Dale Durkles, of course, with AgriVisor Services. Steve Schilling.
Totally agree with Dale. I still think we need to protect income to a certain extent. If you look out at December corn, it's still attractive numbers over the long period of time.
And Bill Mayer.
We've got a very important report next Friday. I think it's a good time to step back, look at where you're at on your marketing, and reevaluate and put some positions on if you think you are not comfortable going into the report.
That's this week's Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.